Hey, guys.
Hey, Laurel.
Hey, Laurel.
So I've been thinking, it's mid-January, and we haven't done our resolutions for the pod for 2020 yet.
Oh, ooh, yeah.
That's right. We were really going to do that.
Slipped our minds there. Okay, I have one. I think that in 2020, I want more sound effects for the podcast, okay? Like zany morning zoo type sound effects, because that's what people tune into a politics and government podcast to hear. Yeah. Goofy sound effects, reverberating voices. Mm-hmm. I love that stuff. We got to do more of it.
Nice, nice. I like it. What about you, John?
Ooh, you know what? I've been thinking we need to do more out of the studio podcasts,
where
we do wacky things like go to a Christmas tree farm or batting cages or take a tour of the Capitol.
We do some of our best work outside of the office, that's for sure.
I love this.
Be it resolved.
So, okay, here's mine. And I feel like this is a little controversial, but hear me out. I feel like we spend a little bit too much time on these intros every week. I know they're really fun and we have a good time, but I feel like we might want to consider just getting to the point. You know, it's just kind of like all this hemming and hawing. Okay, that's great that you get my point, but we have to introduce ourselves.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week we talk about mid-January news. All right, so in the spirit of your resolution, Laurel, of getting right into things, let's get right into things. Where do we start? Mid-January news.
Well, we start with a homework assignment from the governor of Wisconsin, of course, because that's where mid-January usually starts, right?
Yep. We're back in session.
It's been a while since I've been in school, but I usually remember getting a homework assignment from the governor when I, you know, get back to class.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the governor outlined his 2020 agenda for the legislature, and he didn't just say, here's what I want to get done. He is a former teacher. You may have heard this before.
Yeah.
Did you know that? That Tony Evers was a teacher?
Fun fact.
And so he did that. It was his kind of gimmick, and we like gimmicks here on the podcast, whatever. We probably would have done something similar. he's like, here's the homework for 2020 legislature.
Instead of just plain old boring saying, like, here are some things I want us to work on. You know, it just had a little pizzazz to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was on the homework?
Well, there are a few things that we're pretty familiar with here on the pod. I would say, why don't we start with the homelessness package, because this is something we've talked about kind of a lot. This is a package of bills that came out of a task force. They've already passed the assembly, but they're held up in the Senate right now because of some concerns about, how much they're going to cost, basically.
And there was also the dark store loophole on the homework package, which
we haven't talked about the dark store loophole for a while on the pod.
It's been a while.
Been a minute.
Yeah.
And I haven't written about it in a while either. So like the quick summary is not right up there in the brain. Laurel, explain the dark store loophole.
I wrote about it recently because it's actually something that Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling brought up in her end of year interview with me, saying that was a priority for Senate Democrats. So basically what this dark store loophole legislation would do is that it would put an end to the practice of big box stores being able to use empty stores in their comparison for property tax estimates. So basically they're using the value of those empty locations to lower their own property tax bills. And this has caused problems for a lot of local governments because they're not getting as much revenue as they would like. And they're spending a lot of money on legal fees and reassessments of these properties. So this is something that a lot of local governments have been pushing for quite a while.
And this is, quite a while is right. And it's been a few sessions now where there's been talk about whether this will be the session that they do something about this. This is something the bill has been pushed very hard by the, Wisconsin's municipalities, counties, local governments, basically, who are missing out on this tax revenue. And they have quite a coalition of legislators who want to pass something to close what, they have deemed a loophole.
Yeah, there are Republican and Democratic sponsors on this bill. It is a bipartisan bill.
One of the most kind of interesting issues at the Capitol in that way, where you actually have bipartisan support and unlikely Republicans, too. I mean, I remember Dewey Strobel was on board with previous efforts to close this. Mm-hmm. And, this is something that has been fought fiercely by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the business lobby. Mm-hmm. And so to see them on kind of opposite sides from some of these Republicans is unusual. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, we'll just put it on the homework assignment, get it done, right? Right.
Glad that the governor says that's going off our plate.
Yeah, we weren't sure what was going to happen there, but now that it's on the homework assignments, probably. So that'll be interesting to watch. It's one of those where, mm-hmm. like, if it came up for a vote,
It would be hard for some people to vote against it.
It might pass, but it's just kind of all in the process of how it gets there. So what else was on there? Let me refer to the governor tweeted out this very handy, it was like graph paper of his assignments too.
Yeah, there's one that I know you have covered, Sean, so I'll sort of lean on you for the summary of this one, but I promise you'll get it, it'll come back to you, just like riding a bike and doing homework.
Sean doesn't know how to ride a bike.
Very embarrassing for me.
He's too tall, the balance just doesn't work.
I did get in a lot of bike wrecks as a kid.
I'm picturing you on a big trike. Just like I'm a Sean Johnson that would solve size. Everything. Yeah.
A penny farthing. Aww. You know, the big wheel bike.
That'd be cool.
You know, you just need some training wheels and all is okay.
Yeah.
No okay, what have I that. Covered? What have I covered?
So you covered the Attorney General coming to the Capitol and pushing for this bill that would change how Wisconsin processes sexual assault kits.
That's right.
He says that that will help prevent any future backlog. Like, we've had these backlogs in the past. And he said these things, sort of codifying these practices in state law, will prevent this from happening in the future.
Mandatory timelines for the mm-hmm. processing of these kits. And this is another one that has bipartisan support. Actually, when it was introduced, it was Josh Call, the Attorney General, Republican legislator, Dave Steffen mm-hmm. was there, Democratic lawmakers. So another one of those bipartisan bills. And it's kind of hung up in, or it was until recently, hung up in committee. So I don't know how that's going to go, but it's another one where, like, if you just put it up for a vote, who knows what mm-hmm. would happen. But it has to clear the Republican caucuses to get to the floor, typically, if it's going to pass.
I think another one that's really interesting that the governor has included on this list has to do with mental health services in schools. And this kind of goes back to something that we've talked about on the podcast, where we thought that was going to be an area of bipartisan agreement in 2020 between particularly Assembly Republicans and the governor, talking about mental health, especially as it relates to gun violence in Wisconsin, and sort of increasing mental health supports as a way of maybe preventing that sort of gun violence incidents in the future. But we heard from Assembly Speaker Voss at the end of the year that he's not quite interested in more mental health bills. He said we have enough money already dedicated to that issue. So it's interesting to hear the governor saying here, as he did in his year-end interview with you, we want to work on mental health, when we know that it's not necessarily going to be an easy path forward in the Assembly.
This one caught my eye. Cap the cost of insulin copays.
Yeah, I hadn't actually heard of this bill.
I hadn't either, no.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's been out there, but the governor coming out and saying it in a very public way was interesting. What you're talking about there is it seems unlikely to pass the Republican legislature right now, you know, because you're talking about them telling the market insurance mm-hmm. like what to do. I don't know. I mean, you could see how that's politically popular at a time when especially prescription drugs are going to be an election issue this year mm-hmm. because prescription drugs costs are an issue for people. It's something mm-hmm. that they're worried about.
So under this proposal, just to give a little bit more detail, it would cap the price of insulin at $100 for a 30-day supply. It's modeled on a bill that recently passed in Colorado.
So aside from like some of the specific issues that Governor Evers was talking about, though, there's sort of like a political angle to this. This is the governor essentially telling the legislature what he wants them to pass, and he uses this sort of gimmick of homework, quote unquote, for the legislature. How was that received by members of the legislature?
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because Sean and I both have our phones up to the same tweet, just like poised and ready to go.
I'm going to read it.
It's like an Old West.
You read the first half and I'll read the second half.
Draw. Yeah, you can go first.
Well, we both knew how we were going to like react to this question. It was from Senator Scott Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. the majority leader of the Senate. And I mean, we could probably guess how Senator Fitzgerald was going to react to being given yeah. homework from the governor.
Yeah.
It looks like maybe it got under his skin a little bit. He said, quote, "I thought I had a good meeting with the governor last week where we discussed priorities, but giving a co-equal branch of government, quote, homework in a condescending letter won't help him grow support for an agenda with Senate Republicans. The tone of this letter is ridiculous," says Senator Fitzgerald.
Yeah, so it really hits on this battle that Republicans and the governor have had since he took office, which is their perception that he is devaluing the role of the legislature, kind of not wanting to share power in government, having these co-equal branches of government. It hits on an old nerve, I think, him assigning homework.
Plus, man, I graduated school, so I wouldn't get homework anymore. Right. That's the only reason.
Yeah, that's the reason I worked hard in school, so I could just shuck that yoke of homework from myself.
It was like half the reason.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is it unusual, though, for the governor to be asking the legislature to be doing specific things, regardless of, you know, maybe how he's going about doing this?
Not at all, no. In fact, he'll do a lot of that in his State of the State speech that's coming up, where we'll talk about the governor laying out his priorities for 2020. So mm-hmm. I think in this case, it was just the homework part of it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Just the framing of it, I think.
And maybe Evers just didn't see that coming, and he's like, look, I'm just a teacher. Homework's what I do. Mm-hmm. Or maybe...
just trying to be catchy with this, you know, yeah, give it a little bit more pizzazz than my legislative goals for 2020.
Right. Like,
that Earl, was, I Earl did my robot. Robot arms
for that because part. It's either I'm Tony Evers' teacher or I'm Tony Evers' robot.
Yep, it's just a, what do they call that, a polarity or something?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was a mistake. Maybe it was just, innocent. I don't know. Or maybe the governor's saying, look, you're not gonna pass my priorities anyway. So I'm going to put you on the spot, legislature, who's going to be out of here by March, probably. You know, if you're going to put me on the spot, I'm going to put you on the spot.
So there was one item on the governor's homework list that we intentionally didn't mention there because we wanted to talk about it in this next little segment of the podcast, and that would be issues relating to clean water in Wisconsin, because not only did the governor talk about wanting to emphasize clean water legislation, there was also this big package of bills that came out this week about clean water in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so I covered this press conference. This was the culmination of a year-long process of the Speaker's Water Quality Task Force meeting. They had, I think, 14 different hearings across the state. They took testimony from experts and administration officials and residents, and they've worked to put together this package of bills. It's 13 bills. The price tag is about $10 million. Some of that is one-time spending. Some of that is continuing spending. And they're all aimed at basically addressing Wisconsin's water quality problems, which we've heard a lot about in the past couple of years.
And it's pretty all-inclusive, too, in terms of the way that they're identifying water quality problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the big things that they're looking to address, the first would be something we've heard a lot about in Madison, PFAS contamination. Those are those forever chemicals that come from things like firefighting foam that have seeped into groundwater and wells, and they're linked to a variety of health problems. So some of the legislation in this would have to do with cleaning up and storing PFAS, preventing groundwater contamination like the things that have happened in the past. And then we've also heard a lot about like manure spills, groundwater contamination from manure, and then, you know, wells in many parts of Wisconsin that are contaminated with both human and animal waste. So those are kind of the big things, I would say, like the nitrate issue, the waste issue, and the PFAS issue. And this package is trying to address that wide swath of stuff. And they all said, you know, this is a really big issue and this is just the first step in trying to tackle it.
And I was surprised at the, you know, we always talk about the conflict at the Capitol, and how Republicans and Democrats haven't gotten along much in the age of divided government. I was surprised at the people at this press conference. You know, this is a bipartisan package of bills for sure. You had the Democrats and the Republicans that were on this special task force laid out by the speaker. And here they are in agreement on spending $10 million in state money on these clean water initiatives.
Now, I think it's really interesting to note here moving forward that the press conference that I went to, everyone that spoke was from the assembly. Senator Jacques was there kind of standing in the background, but it's a little bit of a question mark how these bills are going to move forward in the Senate, because we heard some positive comments from Speaker Voss about the bills, but Senator Fitzgerald did not respond to a request for comment about what he thinks about the proposal specifically or their prospects in the Senate. So that could raise a little bit of a red flag for these bills getting through in the next couple months before the end of the session. We know that the Senate has had some issues in the past with things that have a big price tag, which this package certainly does. Think about like the homeless package that we just talked about. Senators have raised concerns about how much that's going to cost. So,
and big's always relative. I mean, $10 million in the context of the overall state budget is not big, but right. $10 million is $10
million. $10 million over $76 billion.
Yeah, it, but it's that's real money though, right? $10 million, especially if they think that like $3 million is cause for concern. $3 million, $3.5 million per year when you're talking the homeless package.
And I mean, I guess it comes down to whether or not the votes are there in the Senate. But in general, it seems like clean water is an issue that everybody can kind of agree on. And like, it, where would be a way to get political cover from voting against clean water?
Well, so the Senate could say the money, potentially, Senate Republicans. I actually wonder if there will be some Democrats who say this doesn't go far enough, because while it does spend some money to deal with clean water initiatives, I just think back to the budget last cycle. Tony Evers declared 2019 the year of water. A big part of his clean water initiatives were was state money to replace lead laterals for drinking water. And that went nowhere. I mean, that was kind of belittled a little bit. Like, we can't just, you know, spend government money every time we have an issue to deal with. There are other ways to tackle this problem. So, I mean, that was a big part of the governor's clean water initiatives. It went nowhere. And so I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying it's going to happen because you had this bipartisan press conference here, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were Democrats who said, this isn't enough.
Yeah, and I think this is certainly not an issue that's been immune from political challenges. Think about what we saw with the manure storage rules and the proposal there that caused some conflict with DATCAP and former Agriculture Secretary Paff. Some Republicans in the Senate said that that proposal that had to do with how manure was stored and kind of, you know, how that could potentially affect groundwater and wells and things like that was too onerous for some agricultural organizations. So there is that push and pull of state regulation and when it goes too far in the estimation of some individuals and groups. So this issue, while people might agree, like, yes, we want clean water, how you go about doing that and the sort of things that you put on different groups to accomplish that isn't always an area of agreement.
Well, lacking a clever segue to get into the third segment of our roundup show, how about we talk about some retirements?
That's a good segue, actually.
Thank you.
We're going to retire the podcast, not forever, just today, with some retirements.
Laurel's backing in here with an alternative segue. Also good. Dave Hansen, state senator from Green Bay, is the big retirement that I think we should talk about, because Dave Hansen has represented a competitive district for a long time. He was first elected to the state Senate in 2000. And I'm telling you, every cycle, Republicans are saying, hey, we're gonna get Dave Hansen this time. And if you look at the numbers up in that district, they are they have targeted it for good reason. And Donald Trump won that district in 2016, I guess is what I would say, by I think it was about 10 percentage points. And yet there is Dave Hansen winning again. I mean, he regularly outperforms other Democrats in this Green Bay Senate district. Even after they redrew the map to make it tougher for him to win, he continues to win.
But he's not winning by a lot. He won his last election by just over 1%, right?
Right. And so
it's been tight.
What happens when you take Dave Hansen, this popular incumbent with all sorts of background in his community, and you have another Democrat running without that name recognition, without that history? It's, I'm not saying it's unwinnable for Democrats because it's a competitive district. And the city of Green Bay, the portion of the district that still includes the city of Green Bay, churns out a lot of Democratic votes. But it definitely provides a potential opening for Republicans. And they already have a 19-14 majority in the state Senate. So it's a retirement that is noteworthy, I'd say, in a Senate election.
What did he say about his reasoning for not seeking re-election?
He said he just turned 72 and he wants to spend more time with his family. And that was kind of it, you know. And he said he's run a bunch of elections. I think it was 9 elections in the past 20 years. And he said they can be stressful. He was one of the state senators who was up for recall in 2011. So that gave him an extra election that other people didn't have to go through. And again, because it's a competitive district, he's always getting pressured basically by Republicans. Even if he comes out on top, he has to work that district. And so he's 72 and he wants to spend more time with his family. He says, I know people say that a lot, but that's it with me. He says, I'm confident I would have won. But I want to spend time with my family. He thinks that another Democrat could win. They got to be out in the district though, and really meeting people. He kept using the phrase that he wanted to see somebody young step in and run, but he didn't endorse anybody initially. He said he probably will.
It'll be interesting to see who Democrats come up with for that seat. I know there was a little bit of speculation in terms of on the Republican side that Representative John Nygren might run for that Senate seat.
Yeah, and like I just mentioned Hansen's recall in 2011. Nygren was going to run against Hansen in 2011 for that recall, and he did not get the necessary signatures to get on the ballot. He fell just short, and that's something you just don't see in a high profile election like that. And would he have defeated Dave Hansen in 2011? I don't know, but he would have been a formidable candidate, and he just didn't get on the ballot, and he hasn't challenged Hansen since. So I don't think, as we record this podcast, Nygren has not ruled it out. But, I don't think he's sent strong hints that he's a yes at this point either.
That would be an interesting change. Like if he did end up moving to the Senate, what would happen with the Joint Finance Committee? Because Senator Darling would still be around, who's the Senate chair of the Finance Committee. Would he take over for her? And then, so it's just,
I don't
all
know
of
if
these
she would want that.
Post-election ripple effects. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If Fitzgerald goes to Congress, who's going to be the Senate majority leader, all sorts of what ifs potentially, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are.
So there was one other retirement. Bob Culp, a Republican lawmaker from the Wausau area, announced his retirement. That is, it's less, it has less political significance because he is a Republican. That is a strongly Republican district. Mm-hmm. So whoever runs there is going to have a huge leg up on the Democratic challenger. Culp hasn't even had a Democratic challenger in every election he's run. So that gives you an idea of what that district is like. And Republicans have a 63-36 seat majority in the assembly. So it's unlikely to affect the balance of power in the same way. One thing that, we are kind of watching for in the Senate is, Democrats have said they want to prevent a veto-proof majority in the legislature. You'd need like a 2/3 majority. Mm-hmm. So let's say the Hansen seat's in play. They currently have 19 seats. If Republicans could take that seat, they're up to 20. They would need 22 to get there. It is no small task to hit that kind of number, but that's something that Democrats say they're trying to prevent. Mm-hmm. you know, we would know how all this all turned out if we just had somebody who had seen the future, like future John, to guide us. And, you know, for people who listened to the podcast last week, we'll turn now to the self-referential portion of our podcast. Future John came back in cyborg form and talked us through the stories of 2019, but we started thinking about what happened after that and where things stand right now. Who am I even talking to right now?
Yeah. Am I present John, who was just sort of like maybe locked in a closet for the recording of the last podcast while future John came back and then returned to the future? Or am I present John, who went to the future, lived there for 50 years, got all cyborgy, came back to the present, and am now still all cyborgy for like eternity from here on out?
Well, I think there are two things. You could have de-cyborged yourself when you came back to live in the present. You know, go to the future, live in the future, be cyborgy, come back, and then just, you know, or maybe like de-cyborg before you leave. Be like, I'm going back to the present, or I'm going back to 2019 or whatever.
But when we spoke to him, he was a cyborg.
Yeah, so. Because he was like living in the future at that time and just came back for a minute, you know. But now he knew he was going to come back for an extended amount of time, so he de-cyborged himself, and he's committed to living in the present with us, except for when we have to throw it to future John, of course, in later podcasts.
Yeah, I initially thought that that... As I thought it out, it troubled me as we were walking into the studio today, like, oh gosh, you're still future John. But now I've decided that no, in fact, you went and hid in a closet prior to the recording of the podcast. And you, at some point in the near future, traveled to the distant future and then came back. So, and then I think... That future John probably went back to the future.
That splits him in two, though. I think we have. Well, there's always clearly have different theories.
Multiple timelines going on.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Here's
like
what
Marty McFly going back and observing Marty McFly, who himself is also time traveling. These things happen, Laurel.
I know.
I like that we did a shorter intro this time because it's our New Year's resolution, and then we put 3 minutes of just random banter at the end. Good job, us.
We can't help ourselves.
Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Whether you come for the zany sound effects or the well-reasoned discussions of time travel, you can get both, as well as the occasional bit of state politics news, almost every single week when you subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, leave a rating or review to help other people find us. You can also get the show on Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify, as well as many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes at any time by going to wpr.org/politics.